Okay, so we're 2 days away from the theater, and the challenge always is to get more out of it. So the question is, in the typical, let's take a walk through the typical modern Orthodox mindset about the Seder. What are some of the feelings toward the Seder? What do you say? What are the people's feelings? Let's gather some of the feelings about the Seder.
Let's get it over with, you know, as quick as we can.
Okay, so one thing is that the Haggadah is designed to put a whole lot of roadblocks to get to the main event, which, of course, is the food. That's hassle number one. What else?
Do like some singing and some...
So that's a good part.
Yeah.
Feel as they're the best. So some of the redeeming qualities of it is some good songs.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it can't be a rousing rendition of Dayenu.
Right.
Little Chad Gadja, always fun. You know?
Yeah, well, I know, like, I mean, I remember, like, this one year we were at, like, a Seder, and, like, the Chad Gadja was, like, the, like, you know, big, like, big central part of, like, Seder. Like, people were, like, you know, taking up positions, like, acting out.
Acting out the different animals.
Got very, like, animated.
Okay, very nice. But that's at the way in. That's there's a lot of territory to cover to get to the Chad Gadja.
That lasted a long time.
It was a lengthy Chad Gadja.
Yes.
Okay, what else are some of the feelings people have toward the theater? Lauren?
I have friends who hate the fact that there's two Sizarim. They're like, why can't we just have one?
Right.
Not enough.
One is enough. Well, I mean, and in a certain sense, biblically, they're correct. I mean, the Torah only decides to have one Seder. You know, because of certain extraneous factors we're having, because we have Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galios, the second days of the diaspora, we do everything we did on the first day. Mm-hmm. But in a certain sense, you're right. But what are they? You know, but what are they really saying?
They resent the fact that they have to have Seder.
Right. So it's a burden.
It's a burden. Right. They're tired.
It's exhausting. Right. Okay.
Right.
It's tired. It's long. It's a burden. What are the thoughts?
I'm going to try to get the kids involved a little bit.
Okay, so there's that they feel like that. So for some people, the Seder is really a child element. In other words, it's really to get the kids involved, but everybody else,
yeah,
not that interested.
Yeah, singing like the Manishtana is like a big thing.
And of course, having the kids. Well, that becomes really an opportunity for what? Well, it's involved. Well, that's halachically true, but also that becomes an opportunity if you have a whole multi-generational family, say, that becomes an opportunity to show off the kids. Like, hey, you know, yeah. Kids know something. You know, they could sing, you know, a very nice rendition of the Manishtana. You know, so, okay, so. Right, so.
I also think for many people, they view it more as like a ritualistic type of thing.
And what?
Like,
so what are they? So what's the enjoyment they get out of it?
It's something different from the usual ordinary time.
Okay, so it's a different. It's a, you know, it's a once a year experience, but they just feel like they have to do these certain rituals. Right. Okay. So what other? In other words. Is it something that they find interesting?
I would say to some extent, yeah. People are moderately interested. Like, you know, there's definitely, you know, they can relate to it on a certain level.
So it has some sort of interest.
Definitely.
Or how about
with like the matzah and
people can engage a little bit.
Definitely. There's definitely some curiosity.
A glimmer. There's a glimmer. There's a little.
Except for many seders we've had.
All right. Okay. So what about having matzah and all that kind of stuff, and the wine, and what's your feeling about that? All that stuff.
To some people, it's burdensome that, you know, they can't eat what they want.
Right. This whole not eating hummus business is a real drag-a-rooney.
Definitely.
Not by the Seder, because just for, you know, that's you know too early in the Pesach holiday. But modern, you know, so therefore, well, what are they? This is a classic phenomenon. What's the symptom that really there's a resentment toward the matzah? We mentioned this years back, but it's really you can so tell if you're watching carefully. What is the consumption of Jews of food during these 8 days compared to any other 8 days?
It's more.
How about the 8 days of Sukkot?
More, it's more than the 8 days of Sukkot.
Interesting, right? So you think, so while it says a Yom Tov, you have to have, you know, you're having holiday meals, which is definitely a mitzvah to have, at, you know, basar and yayin and meat and wine and, you know, fine delicacies, but clearly there's a overcompensation. The amount of food eaten, if you speak to anybody who would run a hotel for Pesach, the quantities of food they'd have to have for Pesach versus Sukkot would be no comparison. Now, why is that?
They feel like they've been deprived of what they really want. So, like, when they see something that they don't really want, they'll just eat, like, double the amount. They kind of make up for the fact that they can't get what they really want.
Exactly. So there's a compensation going on. In other words, they really want to have bread, but they have this sort of lame bread called matzah. So either you're snapping the matzah like, uncontrollably, you're snapping little pieces of matzah. If you actually worked out just a slice of bread, it'd be like an enormous amount of bread. The guy's like, there's a huge amount of eating going on there. And then as far as the meat and the chicken and all other stuff, and also the amount of chocolate and nuts that a person consumes over the day, it's just astronomical. Beyond what's needed to make a person simcha. Because really there's a sense of deprivation going on. If I can't have the normal cuisine of chametz, a person feels like really, out of sorts. So that's another factor. So basically, Pesach could be reduced to a painful holiday which is filled the ritual with some curiosity. She has the benefit of the family getting together. You miss that part. They like that for some time before the fighting begins. You know, and the general strife of the reason why the family's not been together since the last holiday. Right, you always notice that. There's always the family. You know, the great family getting together. Then actually the family gets together. And, you know, somehow, the amount of simchas, not as much. Right, so... Alright, so how do we turn this, how do we turn the ship around is the question. You know, first of all, is that what the Seder is supposed to be? You know, a generally boring ritual that has to be endured because we need to do these rituals because we've been doing them for like 3,000 years. So I don't want to dump it because most people do a Seder, by the way. Even among unaffiliated Jews, they'll do at least one Seder. They'll do the Seder. On some level, you know what I mean? They might do a few things, they'll eat some matzah. They'll get quickly to the meal, but they'll do some highlights of the Haggadah.
Why do you think that is?
As you said before, there is a sense of nationalistic identity and joy that gets by doing this in ancient ritual. There is a joy of the ritual. And either for just sort of a religious satisfaction, or just we're doing this ancient practice, it gives a person a certain sense of rootedness to this nationhood. It's a nationalistic phenomena. So it's a nationalistic phenomena. So it's, but it's not really inherent. It's just but that's true to any. It's true to any nation doing any ancient ritual. It's not limited to Jews. So.
Can we say that's the same thing with like Hanukkah, lighting the menorah?
Same thing. Any ritual throughout the year.
But
when it's done in an unthinking, unthoughtful, unreflective manner, and they like doing it, they ask, well, why do they like doing it? What's up with that? So you have to say that there's some inherent either religious enjoyment, which is a sort of psychological enjoyment, or B, that there's a nationalistic thing that I'm doing the national the cultural thing. We're doing this thing which we and our ancestors have been doing for thousands of years. It's sort of a national pride phenomena. Okay? And now you can understand that. So when a person comes in, they'll say, a person brings in halacha, like, well, you know, if you don't lean on something, you have to do that mitzvah again. I mean, what are you telling me these details? You're ruining my moment here. Because I'm having this ritual phenomena, which is giving a certain amount of satisfaction, and you're coming in with all this halacha, with all this, you know, nitpicky Jewish law business. What's up with that? You're raiding on my parade. So they don't like that, because they're not in it for that. In fact, that orientation is a contradiction to what I'm trying to enjoy. So therefore, you'll get a lot of pushback if you start introducing that to somebody who's not coming from that perspective. You know what I'm saying? Who's not ready for that perspective. They don't want to hear about the exact shear, the exact measurement of wine and of matzah and any of these halachic details. Because it's not enriching to them. It's just like more burdensome rules. Don't we have enough rules? The fact that I'm not having a bagel with cream cheese is rule enough. So, alright, so this is really, it's a challenge. And I think everybody and every person who's been up in a traditional background feels that, you know, that challenge to how to make this a uplifting experience versus a, as we said, a boring, ritual-driven, you know, burden. We're dealing with the Seder and the typical modern Orthodox experience, and we've reduced it down to it's an opportunity where there's some enjoyment, family getting together, a little bit of curiosity for a short amount of time, but oftentimes it's viewed as being a painful obstacle to getting to the food, where you're belaboring, where somebody will drone on reading Hebrew and occasional interrupting with some singing of some generally lame tunes.
Ritual as they sing.
Right. So it's like, you know, so it's a drag. So how does one get out of that rut, that modern Orthodox ritualistic rut? That's the challenge. Would you agree that would be the question?
And not to mention every year it just gets older and older.
Right. Also, that's another thing. It's a good point. Oftentimes, most people's siddurim don't change. It's like Groundhog Day. It's like Seder Groundhog Day. The same dude is reading the Haggadah in Hebrew at the people as they sit there like potted plants glazed over because it's really late and you're starving and you feel a little slightly sick because you've had wine before you've eaten anything to cushion it. You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot of like unpleasantness associated with this. With it mixed with the joy that kids are doing some creative things, it's a little nice, little kids doing something. Sing, nothing more cute than a 5-year-old niece singing the Manishtana that gives a smile to everybody's face. That's a Seder Kodak moment if there ever was one. Right? You know, so there's also the Martha Stewart enjoyment of having the Seder table, you know, done like perfectly elegantly. And there's actually an idea like that. That is halakhically correct, but there's, you know, but there's an enjoyment there. So these external enjoyments, but
you're talking about the Seder plate itself?
No, I'm talking about the whole Seder table.
It's a masterpiece.
All right, so, you know, people do it really nicely. They do it, you know, with the Seder plate and then the matzah and all the plates done beautifully and, you know, done in a very elegant manner, like, you know, it's the experience of fine dining. You've seen that, you know what I'm saying? At least in a picture.
Thanks.
It's the question: how do you turn the ship around? I mean, you know. So the clear. I think we've stated the problem clearly. So so the first thing to do is what really needs to be done is the first thing is really a process of redefinition. You have to ask yourself, what is the goal of the night? If you understand the goal, you can work backwards, and then you can understand what really needs to happen. In preparation, in exchange of just removing the chametz from the domain of the house. You know what I'm saying? So what's the goal? What's really the goal at the end of the night? What, in order to have a Seder home run, what does a person have to achieve?
It seems to be it's not about like the pleasure and enjoyment. It's more about gaining insight. If you can gain some type of insight. Like use the Seder, for example, as a blueprint to go about uncovering certain insights.
Okay, so that so you're saying that's a part of it, but that's necessary, but ironically insufficient.
Right. I mean, I don't know if it's
you need
that. You're supposed to feel a certain way if that's part of the mitzvah.
You have to feel a certain way.
I mean, I guess you got to do that too.
So this isn't. Some mitzvahs don't require a transformation of a person. I think Rabbi Mann put it best. He feels that, and I think he's right. It's easier to fast a Yom Kippur than to do fill the mitzvah, which is the main mitzvah of the night of telling over the story. It's not simply a recanting of a story, like it sounded like what did you do last weekend? Because the Megillah itself says, not the Megillah, the Haggadah itself says. The whole door over door, every generation, Chayav Adam Liras is Asma. One has to look at himself, Kilu Hu Yatsam Mitzrayim, that he himself left Egypt. Shadam Marvi Gagel Vin Chavayamahu Limor, Bavur Zeh Hashem Li, he Hashem did for me when he took me out of Mitzrayim. Lo Ethel Zena Bil Vadgal Hashem Akash Baruch Hu, not that only did our forefathers of God redeem, Ela Achosanu Galzam, and also us, Shemar Osanu Mitzrayim, he redeemed us. So, it's not simply that I have to talk about something that happened to my ancestors 3,700 years ago, but I have to feel as if I myself, left Egypt. And not only that, to the degree, that's not enough, to the degree, therefore we end up, therefore we are obligated to praise, to glorify, to exalt, to adore, to bless, to elevate, to claim the one who did all these miracles for our ancestors and for us. He took us from slavery to freedom, from sorrow to joy, from mourning to festivity, from deep darkness to great light, and from bondage to redemption. Let us therefore recite before him a new song. So really the goal is that a person has to get to the state of feeling that he feels a desire to say Hallel, praising of Hashem for what Hashem has done for him as an individual. So a person is like emotionally neutral at the end of the Seder, or through the whole Seder, he didn't achieve the goal. He was a bystander. He was never in the game. He was up in the bleachers. Never asked down, came down to, he was not on the field. So the goal, now the question, now that brings about, there's an obvious question here. There's a striking question. Question is, I didn't know that. That's very nice that I should view myself as leaving Egypt. But there's one interesting historical fact: I did not leave Mitzrayim. Not only did I not leave Mitzrayim, I can't really understand their perspective of having to be a slave. And I don't really know. And can I really understand the feelings of redemption? I mean, what is the Torah? Is the Torah asking from us to do the impossible? Is this like supposed to go into a sort of like a profound leap of imagination here? Is that what we're supposed to be doing? How do you understand that? I understand discussing the story, studying the story, analyzing the story, and getting engaged in the story. I understand that, but why is that additional requirement that I have to see myself as if I left Mitzrayim? Why is that a necessary? And also, more importantly, what does that even mean? What does that even mean, practically?
That you're shooting talking God.
But we're not talking about the story.
It represents certain ideas about God.
So why do I have to see it from the perspective of being a slave? Why do I need this whole story to begin with? But are we like playing games here? Let's all pretend. Is Seder about a night of let's play pretend? Imagine you were enslaved to Paro, and you were building a pyramid, and then Hashem with Moshe came and did the 10 plagues, and you were redeemed. I mean, but it's just not historically true. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? It's like kind of odd. Yeah, go ahead.
It's an Asara component.
Let's say, but before you say it's a necessary component, but isn't that false?
I would say it's a necessary component to feel like you're redeemed just to going through the whole story. It's the only way you're going to get like to that point where, you know, you could actually feel redeemed to yourself is by going through the story.
Yeah, you have to understand their psychological, Jewish people's psychological mind in order to fully understand.
Okay, so that's something like you must understand the shibud, the subjugation. And also does the Torah give you a personal account? For example, let's say the mitzvah was to talk about the Holocaust. Okay? So we have a tremendous amount of first hand accounts. You could watch movies. There's no difficulty you getting absolutely engrossed in the story of, let's say, the Holocaust. The Torah does not give us that much material. And not only that, the map they gave you was the part which was from a sort of a sketch, which is then explained via the Arami Ovid Avi, in other words, which is like about 5 sukkim of just a very sparse outline of the story, and then with the Torah Shebaal Peh, explanations of each phrase, but very, very sparse. It's not giving you a lot of, even if that is the goal, you're not even given a lot of material to really make it happen. And also, there's also all this halacha stuff going in there. You're saying, tell you about the mitzvah of Zechiras, Yitzchus Rhyme. There's a lot of stuff which seems to be not helpful to that goal to begin with. You know what I'm saying? So first is that I did not, here's the fact, I did not leave Mitzrayim. Two, I'm not given material to really get into that mindset that I can imagine myself. Or I can imagine myself going, there is enough materials and I'm close enough to the event that I could imagine myself being in the Holocaust and being rescued from it. You know what I'm saying? Because I knew survivors. There's a lot of literature on it. There are good movies. You know what I'm saying? It's not hard to visualize yourself in that thing. But Mitzrayim, this is like a, it's like an ancient story. So the first question is, how could I even achieve it? And let's say I could achieve it, you know, but it's not really true. But let's say we solve that problem. What's the point? You know what I'm saying? That's the basic question. Is that a fair? Those are fair questions. This is the whole Seder. So you were, I think you were on the right road before there, Dave.
Like a detour.
Nothing like your brother to give you all the amount of reassurance that you need. You know.
I think I got knocked off the road.
The question is, it's not like you have to high about and weirdness as well. You notice this ki'ilu, as if you left what's wrong. The key thing is the ki'ilu. Analogous. What element of the leaving Mitzrayim I need to... I mean, should we all dress in ancient Egyptian garb and sit at the table? Should we, you know, throw out some, you know, tremendous amount of sand in my living room and walk through the desert, you know, like we're walking out of Mitzrayim in the sand of the desert?
Oh, it's a psychological recognition.
Okay. And what is that part? And what is that recognition? And why is all this, you know, as you're saying, going back to your original point about why is, and how does insight, where does learning fit into that? If I'm telling an account, there's no learning. If I'm about to tell you an account of what occurred, how I was liberated from Auschwitz, you know, there's no learning in that. Just tell a story. Here, there's a profound amount of focus of learning on the night of the Seder. In fact, the more the merrier. All right? How's that fitted to it? So the basic point, and Ray Mann shared this idea with me, and coming in a similar direction was that we have to view ourselves as being the beneficiaries of the Geula. That we have to view ourselves being nigalim, that we are redeemed people. In the sense that we have to think of a couple of appreciate through the activity of the learning and the discussion of the story throughout the night. What does that mean? That means like this: a person has to, at the very least, think about if the Jewish people were not redeemed, and I would be, and we would be among just the nations of the world. What would we be like? What would we be like, and what would I be like as an individual? Okay. Well, what's the answer to that question? You're like everybody else. Which would be that we would be people who were basically following some idolatrous creed, you know, and just being a pleasure seeker like everybody else. And one day just drifting into another in a sort of a pointless stream of nothingness. And then we die. Rather, the sense of that we were so Hashem, because of His chesed, extracted us from that, and geula means putting you in a position where you can achieve your potential. So they were removed from the ferocious injustice of Egypt. And not only that, but given an entire system of Torah, 49 days later, to be able to allow them as a nation to become a truly free people. So, in other words, you cannot take a third-party perspective that I'm looking at something which is being flashed on the screen that happened to somebody else. I have to feel that I am a person who, first of all, has the idea that I was redeemed. I'm part of that continuum of people. And it's a tremendous act of chesed that I've been extracted from that. And if a person thinks about that, and not only himself, but the totality of his family and his community and nationally, he will be able to find within his, in himself to feel a deep sense of gratitude where an expression of praise it would be a natural feeling. I will never forget Rabbi Wurzberger, who was a student of the Rav for over 50 years. He was a prominent rabbi. He was a PhD from Harvard. He taught at Yeshiva University for many years in philosophy. He was a rabbi at Shari Tefillah in Lawrence for, again, 40 years, something. So he came to the school, Torah Academy, I don't know, it was maybe 10 years ago. And he said when he was in Boston as a young rabbi in the 40s, he had the opportunity of going to the Seder by the Rav. Now that's the Seder. And he will never forget, and now he's passed on, but he told the students, he will never forget looking at the face of the Rav as he said the Hallel. He was simply transfixed. In other words, he was struck by looking at the intensity of the Rav saying Hallel. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it was not a rattling off of a Hallel. It was a Hallel that was evocative of a really deep held feeling and passion perspective. You know what I'm saying? It was a powerful Hallel. I mean, I can't describe it. I wasn't there, but that's what he tried to convey to me, what he was saying. So really, the goal of the Sipur is to appreciate all the aspects of the Shibud, of the degradation of the slavery, specifically the aspect of that we were culturally seduced and wanting to be Egyptian-like and following their belief system, which was primitive. And then how Hashem sent Moshe to redeem us via the 10 plagues, and allowing us to have a chance. And that was really a, and that was a, that, and that's the ultimate chesed. So that's the goal. So if that's the goal, now let's work backwards. So what does a person have to do before, you know, if that's the goal of the Seder, then what has to happen before the Seder? What does a person have to do before the Seder to have this momentous experience?
He's got to prepare.
He's got to make, because really, the, in order for that to happen, is that if the person who's heading up the Seder, whoever his audience is, it's not an audience, but it's a classroom. And you got to prepare. And you have to find those elements of the process of from Sheba Lagula, from bondage to redemption, that can resonate with people around the table. And that can be very challenging because you might have a very wide bandwidth of people. So there's all kinds of strategy. You have to think about it very carefully. If you are the head of the Seder, how are you going to engage people who have very limited time, who have very limited, you know, limited patience as they smell the delicious soup and brisket in the kitchen. So you need to think carefully how you're going to help the people use all the, you know, all the show and tell elements of the Seder and plus more to engage them, whether they be children or adults. Yeah.
You know what's funny is, the other thing about this, what does everybody ask you? What's the main question? What time did your Seder? That's everybody's question. Like,
right.
Why is that like an obsession?
See, the thing is, that's interesting.
It's, right, everyone asks that. Right?
Yes, that is true. So what does that question mean?
Not how is your Seder, but what time is your Seder?
Right, now there's two, I think there's two elements to that thing. One is that, there are two elements. One is that the people who want to hear that the super fast Seder, like, you know, we put this baby to bed by 10:45, you know, and we get the gold medal for quickest Seder out of the park. You know, we took care of our cultural responsibility, and we had a delicious dinner, and we knocked it out of the park by 11 o'clock. Boom. That's one group. Then there's the other one that looked at, they know that there's, you know, because the actual Haggadah says that the five Tanayim were involved in it until a student came to remind them that they were time for a Kriya Shema. So they know there's a ego ideal of discussing it and whoever, just, you know, longer. So the people more to the right are want to say, like, oh, I had a Seder, we were learning and discussing the things until, you know, till 4 in the morning. That is certainly better. I mean, obviously, but the goal is not, it's not a bragging thing. It's really a personal thing. The question really is did you have a Seder that impacted you or not? That's the question. And that point of movement, internal movement, could have been only 10 minutes, 10 key minutes. You know what I'm saying? It's trying to get into the realm of what it means to be an Eved, and then what it means to be a Nigal, to be redeemed. In other words, the question really is, were you able to say Hallel properly? That's the question. Do you say Hallel with your lips or with your heart? How's that for the bumper? Shrinking it down to the bumper sticker. That's the goal. So everything else works backwards from that. So if that's your goal, well, that, you know, so then you got to think about, you know, to really try to engage and prepare for the beforehand. Look, the Seder is, the more you put in before, the better the Seder you get. Like everything else. You get what you put in. You know, you got to really, you should look over the Haggadah, you should, you know, try to really, you know, think about, you know, major issues that circle around the issue of the slavery and its relevance to us. Has to, you know, it requires a fresh look at this. I just picked up this new Haggadah. called Exalted Evening. They gathered like many of the ideas from the Rav on the thing. It's an excellent one. He put a lot of good stuff in there. English, short, sweet, boom. So you can, look into that and but try to really make it an edge. Because what is it, to put it in a sense or less, what is the Seder? It's the night of Masorah. It's where the father or the prime educator of the family communicates the fundamental principles of Judaism to the family. That's the goal. It's the educational Super Bowl of the year. That's what it is. And you wouldn't go into the Super Bowl without practicing, looking at the tape, getting your best. And depending on the kids, if you have young kids, you want to do things that spark their curiosity. They only care about the story that they ask, they're interested in. So there's an obligation in the Seaport that you have to do activities that are different that engage the kid. So I remember one Seder where my father came to the Seder dressed as Moshe Rabbeinu. He said, "Oh, what do you do?" I said, "I'm Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm taking the Jews in." So that was a launched into a nice Seaport conversation. I remember also when he was in the middle of he went to the middle of the living room, put out a red blanket and he started jumping over it. I said, "Oh, what are you doing? We're crossing the Red Sea. Come." So all the kids got off the table and started jumping over the blanket. First of all, it's good. You want to mix things up. You don't want to be just like a boring lecture kind of Seder anyways. It is, even by law, you have eating, you have singing, it's a multimedia experience. It's supposed to be a multimedia experience because you have to engage all the senses. It's drinking, reclining, you get every dimension there. Auditory, visual, it's gustatory, it's kinesthetic, it's all the modes of how we engage. It's supposed to have fully fledged and every multi-sensory experience to get the person involved. So it should not be this. There was people and they were slaves, and then they did get redeemed. And let's bring out the brisket. All right, it has to be a first person connection. That's really the goal. That's it. And you have to prepare for that in mind and to get there. Now it's not. Now you can see this is not an easy mitzvah. Not an easy mitzvah because. All you can do is prepare to get in there, but either you're in the zone or you're not in the zone. That's it.
Once you get two chances.
You get two chances, right. And that's right. If you live outside land of Israel, you do get two chances. That's it.
It's a real Super Bowl if you're in Israel. It's a real Super Bowl once a year.
That's it.
It's best out of the three series.
But really, you don't get two chances. You have two Siddurim, but the main biblical Seder is the first night.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the second night is a rabbinic thing. We're doing it because of we're keeping 2 days of we keep the idea of 2 days of Yontif is to keep the Xerox of the first day. It has more to do with the setting up a certain night. It's really more to do with preserving the Jewish calendar than it is about Pesach.
It's really the first night.
I'm not saying you should not do but the first night is it's the main event. It's the main event. It's showtime. That's it. You want to be on the money. Alright, so that's the, the key thing is the more you can prepare the concept, the more chance you're going to have the tools at your disposal, just like a quarterback, he doesn't practice one play. He has, even written on his arm, literally. This guy has all the plays in his little special thing there.
Brady.
He's got the whole like about 70 plays. Play, but on his arm, just velcros up, velcros down. Okay, you want to have a full playbook.
Probably the hardest working quarterback,
All right.
On and off the field. That's why he's so good. That's what he said. He said if he didn't prepare, he wouldn't be any good. That's what he said.
It's true. I believe that's true for everybody. you want to prepare for the Seder as much as you can. Not simply the, you know, making the charosis and setting the table and all that stuff. And people exhaust themselves, specifically women, and then comes the Seder, they're so exhausted they just fall asleep after, like, Mahashana.
Or they drink too much wine too quick, then they're out. It's also...
Right. You may want to first, you know, first of all, get a small halachic glass you can, you know, get yourself a 4-ounce glass, you know, and just drink, you know, maybe drink some Muscato or just rot, you know, or just flat out grape juice, and then once you have some food later on, the last two cups go for the, you know, the real deal wine if you can't handle it. All right, so these are just some thoughts. Any questions?